And so it allows them to be completely air-gapped. And when you think about the missions that our intelligence community, the Department of Defense run and need access to real commercial-grade compute and commercial-grade AI and data analytics capabilities.
Today on the Daily Scoop podcast from the Scoop News Group, Google's Karen Dayhut on the biggest opportunities for AI in the public sector. And what's next for Google public sector in the federal landscape? It's Tuesday, April 16th, 2024. Welcome to the Daily Scoop podcast, where you'll hear the latest news and trends facing government leaders. I'm the host of the Daily Scoop podcast, Billy Mitchell. Here are today's top headlines. Longtime federal network defense and zero trust leader Sean Connolly is leaving government for a role at Zscaler. Connolly, senior cybersecurity architect and trusted internet connections program manager for the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, will close out this week before joining cloud security company Zscaler to take a role focused on zero trust and security compliance from an international perspective. Connolly has more than 20 years of federal experience in cybersecurity, counting more than 11 years with CISA and its predecessor, the National Protection and Programs Directorate, in various roles, and nearly 7 years at the State Department as a senior cybersecurity and IT design architect. Earlier this year, Connolly spoke at the Zero Trust Summit about the latest on federal zero trust progress, how the Trusted Internet Connections program has evolved, why IT modernization is so imperative for improved cybersecurity outcomes, and he highlighted a new office that CISA launched dedicated to zero trust implementation across government. His last day at CISA is Friday, April 19th. In other news, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement is sending mixed signals on the status of its controversial commercial phone location data program. In January, ICE said it had stopped using commercial telemetry data that government agencies buy from private companies. But now, even though ICE says it has received no new requests for the use of commercial telemetry services since December of 2022, the agency has filed a privacy impact assessment with the Department of Homeland Security's Privacy Office for review of the matter. This kind of documentation is supposed to be released when agencies deploy a technology that could involve someone's personal information. If that assessment is finalized, ICE plans to develop procedures focused on guiding the use of commercial telemetry services. The move comes as civil rights advocates have raised repeated concerns about the use of commercial telemetry data, and relatedly, Senators Ron Wyden and Rand Paul have introduced the Fourth Amendment Is Not For Sale Act, which seeks to rein in the government's use of this information, among other measures. And within DHS, using that data has raised alarm bells. Last September, the department's Office of Inspector General released a redacted report highlighting that agency subcomponents had not followed the law nor complied with policies surrounding privacy. ICE, in particular, was flagged for using this data without an approved privacy impact assessment. For more top news and insights at the intersection of the federal government and technology, visit fedscoop.com. Today we have a special interview recorded from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, which last week was home of Google Cloud Next 2024. While there, I had the tremendous opportunity to speak at length with Karen Dayhut, Google Public Sector CEO. During our conversation, we covered a lot of ground, taking in all of the announcements from Next, reflecting on the upcoming 2-year birthday of Google Public Sector and what's been accomplished in that time, how generative AI is permeating the public sector, and all of what's ahead. By the way, this is one of many interviews captured at Google Next, so make sure to tune in to others released throughout this week. Now, over to that conversation with Karen Dayhut.
Karen, thanks so much for joining me. Great to see you here in Vegas at Google Next. How are you doing?
It is so great to be here with you, Billy. Thank you.
Well, I know there's a lot of exciting announcements and a lot that makes sense and is applicable to the public sector that I know you're excited to share. So let's start there with the obvious. There's been all of these product and service announcements that have been made over the last 2 days. Which of them are you most excited about and think that are good fits for the public sector?
Thank you for the question. And I have to tell you, sitting through the keynote was one of the most exhilarating and frightening moments of my professional career, because I realized first that there was so much that Google was announcing and so much to be excited about, and I'll share some of those things with you. But terrifying at the same time, because I I didn't know more than half of those announcements. So really what I'm tracking for public sector are a couple of super important things. First of all of the work around building a fully integrated enterprise-grade AI stack is so important to our public sector customers. For a number of reasons. One, enterprise grade. It's not a consumer product being used in enterprise. It is an enterprise product built for large, complex, bureaucratic organizations. So that is super compelling. All of the security announcements we had around building Gemini into SecOps, critically important for our customers. Security operations are top of mind for all of our federal, state, and local governments. And knowing that Google Cloud is the most secure cloud and we continue to build on that, super important to them. And of course, from a responsible AI perspective, the grounding, the additional grounding mechanisms we're putting in place to make sure that we are delivering on responsible AI is important. And the digital watermarking is of course important too, making sure that we have authoritative sources that we are referring to. So those are the key ones, but there's so much more that was announced at the keynote.
And I, you know, just as an aside, obviously this is a huge conference. There's a lot outside of public sector, but tell me about, you know, your perspective as the leader of the public sector organization and sort of the presence that is here in the public sector sense. And you said you had a national security event earlier in the week, but tell me more about sort of how you've thrown the public sector flag up, you know, so to speak, while you've been here.
Yeah, thank you, Billy. It is so important to me that when people see Google and Google Cloud, that they understand our commitment to government mission. And, you know, I've said this before, I'm a mission junkie, having served in the Navy. I think it is super important that we bring these amazing technologies to bear on public sector and the important missions of the public sector. And so this is our first year, Google Public Sectors, of really having a brand presence at Google Next. We have a booth on the expo hall. We have many of our customers here. We have many of our customers talking about on panels what we do with and for them. On Monday, prior to the opening of Next, we had a National Security Day where we had over 100 national security customers join us to hear about our technology, what I consider to be important differentiators of our technology, and how we are delivering and can deliver on their mission. So, to me, this is a moment in time that I think all of us will look back on at Google and say, this is the moment where we made our presence known across public sector and our presence to really compete in a big way in this environment, and we're excited to do so.
Yeah, and I think it sort of begs the question, it's almost 2 years in now since Google Public Sector was launched, I think it was June or July of 2022. What's that journey been like? How's the company grown over that time? And if you have any, what are some lessons learned on how that, you know, the next steps you're going to take as you look to scale it even further?
Yeah, so it was June of 22 where we stood up Google Public Sector, and I came in October of 22 as the CEO. And as I look back on the year and a half that I've been here, there have been a couple of really important things that have happened. First and most importantly, we've been able to recruit amazing talent to Google. I think that's for two reasons. One is the Google brand is certainly super strong, and people just genuinely like Google and our products. So we've been able to recruit really top talent like Elizabeth Moon, who came in to lead and transform our customer engineering organization, and Aaron Weiss, who has both a private sector career as well as a public sector career as the CIO for the Department of the Navy. So super excited about the talent. We've also been able to very clearly and deliberately outline our strategy. We have the idea and the technology to deliver commercial grade cloud to bear on all public sector missions. Generally available cloud, commercial cloud for non-secure missions, assured workloads for IL5 confidential and classified matters, secret and top secret at GDCH hosted, Google distributed cloud hosted, And so we've been able to purpose build technology for government missions that take a very different approach than what our competitors have done. So point two is all around the technology we are building. The third piece that gives me such confidence in what we are doing is the passion that our customers bring to us. They want to work with us. We are partnering with people like John Sherman, the DoD CIO, to really purpose-build technology to serve him and the department. This isn't a case where we're building technology in a back room and then we come and try to get it accredited. We are working very closely with them to build what they need and accredit along the way. And that partnership and that passion for what we're doing transcends just Google. Our customers feel it too, so it's very gratifying.
You mentioned GDCH, and I know there was the big announcement that it's accredited now at the top secret level. Tell me why that. I mean, I understand why it's a big deal, but tell the listeners why it's a big deal for the intelligence community, Department of Defense, and really any of those agencies with highly sensitive information.
We're so excited about the announcement that Google Distributed Cloud Hosted is now authorized on secret and top secret. And what that really means is we have built a technology that is commercial cloud, but that can operate at the very vast edges of our national security community's enterprise to deliver on the promise of commercial cloud and commercial grade AI data analytics capabilities. And so what we've done is we have built this capability in cloud that is capable of running, operating, and managing the government's most classified data in their data center, on an edge device, wherever they would like to, that will never be connected to cloud. And so it allows them to be completely air-gapped. And when you think about the missions that our intelligence community, the Department of Defense run and need access to real commercial grade compute and commercial grade AI and data analytics capabilities, we're delivering that now. We can deliver that now via this accreditation. And it would not have happened without great partnership with the national security community. And I'm so gratified by what they've been willing to work with us on.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a great accomplishment, and I know it's a key step for you guys to expand your work in the public sector. We've talked a little bit about AI already. So much of what's going on here and the hype around it is AI and generative AI. What do you see as, and we've probably talked about this before to some degree, but it's changing every day, so it's worth bringing up again. What are some of the biggest opportunities you see for the public sector to adopt and embrace generative AI?
Yeah, I think it's super funny to me when I think back. The conversations we're having today about generative AI and AI are different than they were 3 months ago, 6 months ago, 9 months, 12 months ago. The technology in the community is moving so quickly. What we announced in the keynote yesterday were so many advances in our Vertex AI stack, and I would be remiss if I didn't first mention that what we have built at Google is an enterprise-grade generative AI vertical stack that starts with infrastructure and goes all the way up the stack to AI and AI operations. That's one of a kind and singular in our industry. What I'm excited about is being able to leverage that now for public sector, regardless of if it's non-classified, classified, or secret and top secret. Our platforms can run Vertex AI on all three of those stacks. And what we see, we've done surveys with our customers, state and local customers, as well as federal customers. What they report is, one, a real need for AI and generative AI adoption. Two, a real interest in using these technologies to better serve the mission, to better serve the citizen. And three, is they're already using it. In 50% of state and local government surveyed, 50% say they're already leveraging this technology in some capacity. And we're seeing that. There are four general use cases that we see our customers asking us for. The first is for worker productivity. And I like to refer to it as an always-on personal assistant. So if I'm an analyst of sorts, I can have a cybersecurity analyst, let's take it, that I'm looking at multiple screens and something comes across that I don't quite understand, a personal assistant underpinned by general AI that I can go and say, hey, I see this code coming across. What might that mean? And it can use a corpus of privately held information inside of that agency to help that analyst be more productive. That's a use case that we're seeing play itself out, state, local, and federal government. Second use case is all around end-to-end process automation. How do you make a process run more rapidly, more quickly, so that you know you can take toil out of the process, and using generative AI to move, you know, to more readily automate a process is something that is happening hand over fist, particularly in state and local government. Third use case is all around citizen engagement, and we think there is a true huge application in the federal civilian space for this. How do you enable the public's ability to engage with government more quickly, whether it's an enterprise search application on an IRS website, or it's translating, you know, information to the citizen in the language that he or she speaks. And the last use case that we're not seeing as much of, but we see it a lot in commercial industry, is new product development using generative AI. I always use the Spotify example because it's a cool one and I'm a Spotify user, where they're creating generative AI DJs to play your most, you know, music that is most interesting to you. And so creating new products. And I can see the government going down this path, particularly when you think about intelligence analysts or analysts writ large, being able to develop better and more effective products for their customers. So that's the fourth use case. And all of these are incredibly relevant to government.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's a great synopsis of, I think, some common things. One of the things we hear about, particularly at the federal level, is some people are hesitant to jump into generative AI because of the risks, and they don't want to be have those first user risks. So I'm sure this is something that you have to put on your convincing hat and work with those people to say, hey, let's take this step or whatever you may do. But how does that look? How do you work with CIOs or CISOs or other IT leaders to get them in the game on generative AI if they have some hesitation?
There's no doubt that that exists across government and, to be honest, with commercial industry. I think there are a number of things that we are doing to help allay the fear that might come with it and to accelerate the adoption. First is, I'm a believer that this needs to be leader-led. Executives in organizations need to understand the power of generative AI, how it can help them serve their mission better, and they need to have a deep understanding of the technology, not at a technical level, but what it can do for them and what it will not do. So when I use that example, Vertex AI, for example, does not expose an enterprise's data to the wild. It's really important for leaders to understand that so that they are more willing to adopt it. So I spend a lot of my time with government executives and leaders talking to them about these things and answering their questions. The second point is we build a lot of proofs of concept, POCs, because we think it's so much better to show the technology than to tell the technology. And so when we can really solve a hard problem using the technology and show them how it works and the power of it, super compelling. I used the statistic earlier, and I don't know that it's an accurate statistic, but I feel like nearly 100% of those proofs of concept tend to end up in production because they're so powerful. And the last area is Google is partner-led and partner-centric, and so we rely on our great partner network, you know, Accenture, Deloitte, Quantify, to really help us convince their customers, our customers, that generative AI is such a powerful tool. And we have great partnerships with a number of our partners where we're really leading on Gen AI with them. So for example, Deloitte, we are leading with Gen AI with Deloitte in the state and local community. And certainly they know how to, you know, position this product in the marketplace so that customers really want to use it.
So, you know, we've talked a lot about AI, but I want to make sure that AI takes a lot of the conversation a lot of times. I'm guilty of sort of driving that as the member of the media. But, you know, are there things that are overshadowed when AI takes so much attention? And are there things we should be paying more attention to that aren't getting the attention that they deserve because AI is so in the spotlight right now? So what are those other things, I guess, that you hear from your customers or that you feel that your customers should be focusing on at this moment?
Your point is exactly right. I think back in December of 2023, I guess it was, or 2022, December of 2022, when, you know, generative AI captured the imagination, and it feels like ever since then we've been talking about generative AI and AI. As you know, Google's been working on AI for a decade or more, and it's been at the core of who we are. So this sudden, what appears sudden in the marketplace, interest in it is not sudden to us. But other things we need to be talking about, security. You know, this idea that we need to secure our infrastructure, secure our enterprises, is of critical importance to government. And we've been working in that space a very long time. Super proud of our acquisition of Mandiant in late 2022. You know, world-class threat intelligence, world-class incident response. We bring all of that to bear inside of our cloud now. So when we're delivering just routine cloud services, it's underpinned by these security functions that are the most secure cloud in industry. Other areas where I think we are paying close attention is just how do enterprises collaborate and use productivity software in a completely different way, in a much more natural and ease of use way. So our Google Workspace capability and tool suite is gaining traction and gaining, I would say, in its popularity because of the ease of use, because of, you know, for years we focused on delighting consumers, and now that same delight factor is delighting enterprises. So those are just a few other areas we're working on and continue to build out, not just AI. It's not all about AI.
Yeah, and I'll close with just a quick follow-up on the security element. It's something I've been thinking a lot and asking other people here. Do you see the pendulum swinging? And I know that you obviously have GDCH, which is, you know, it's not a public cloud. It's very much on, you know, a private cloud. But in the commercial sense, do you see the pendulum swinging at all? Because we've seen some examples recently of, you know, some of your competitors who have had breaches and things like that, where people are starting to change how they feel about cloud or their trust in the cloud, or I'm not sure if that's an accurate assumption, but I'm curious, you know, do you see that at all?
There has been a lot of press lately about breaches inside the cloud community, our competitors, and a lot of that has been underpinned by nation-state attacks on their infrastructure. And I would say it has raised questions with regard to the quality of security and the quality of the security of the cloud itself. I always go back to Google was hacked in 2008 by the PRC. Project Aurora, you can look it up online and YouTube and read about it. And in 2008, we took a very serious look at security, and we founded all of our security principles at that time on zero trust and a zero trust architecture. And since then, Google has built its entire foundation on zero trust, which means that I always know who the user is, what machine that user should access, and what access rights that user has to Google Enterprise information. And we are a big believer that zero trust is the most secure architecture and that government needs to be going down this path. So much so that, you know, we've been working with the Department of Defense to build out their zero trust architecture. It's a long road. I don't think that the breaches in other people's cloud products has affected us, but it has raised the art of the conversation, which we welcome because of our zero trust approach to security.
That makes sense. Karen, thanks so much for your time. Always a pleasure to chat with you, and best of luck with the rest of Next.
Thank you, Billy.
For more on federal AI adoption, visit fedscoop.com. The Daily Scoop podcast is available on all podcast platforms. If you've already rated the podcast on your platform of choice, thanks so much. High ratings and good reviews of the show help more people to find it. The Daily Scoop Podcast is a production of the Scoop News Group in Washington, D.C. Adam Butler and Carlin Fisher help put the show together, and the entire Scoop News Group team contributes. We'll be back again tomorrow with more top headlines. Until then, I'm your host, Billy Mitchell. Thanks so much for listening.